Welcome to The Vinyl Preacher, your weekly podcast where we talk about the Bible and make a playlist. I'm Matt Cato, pastor at St. Mark's Lutheran Church in Los Angeles, California.
And I'm Zach Paris, reporting live from the Asheville Bureau of The Vinyl Preacher Incorporated, where it's a beautiful, beautiful spring day, Matt, verging on summer. We're in the 80s. Wow.
Wow, that sounds really nice. You're also near Harvest Records, I believe.
We are near Harvest Records.
Are you ready for Record Store Day?
I'm not particularly interested. I'm more of a stay away on Record Store Day kind of guy. All the people and stuff.
Yeah.
There's nothing. I looked at the releases part of Record Store Day. There's actually a good podcast. I'll put the link in the description. Of my local Asheville podcast, the Asheville Overlook, which is like a NPR-ish former, I believe, NPR reporter who's spun off his own podcast, interviewing the founder of Harvest Records to talk about things like Record Store Day. And I got to learn on the podcast that being a part of Record Store Day actually comes with, like, there's some strings and, like, you got to commit to it and stuff.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, there's one local record store that doesn't do it, but... But it did help me find another record. I don't know. I like it. It's got, if you go, there's a U2 release. You know, just a little Atomic City live single. I'm super bummed. I can't go this year. I have a funeral to do on Saturday. And sadly, I couldn't tell them. I'm not available that day because it's actually Record Store Day. I gotta go stand in line.
I believe it's happens to be 420 this year, which is 420. Earth Day, right? Is that how it?
I don't know. Is it?
On Sunday.
One of those
days is your Earth Day. But I learned they can't, like, they'll get kicked out of the program if they save anything for anybody at Record Store Day. There's, like, no, like, holding back copies. You can't sell any of it online until the next day. Like, whole thing. And, like, the Galaxy Brain stuff they try to do to, like, figure out what to buy and how much of what to buy. Like, they're not guaranteed to have one of everything that's...
Right.
Coming out of Record Store Day, you know?
Yeah.
Because they get stuck with records, which I didn't know. Like, the labels don't buy unsold albums back.
Sure.
What they'll do with books and stuff sometimes, other forms of media. But so they always got to be a little more careful with what they buy or do not buy because they're buying it, period.
Yeah. 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 No, my first experience with Record Store Day was that I heard there was a U2 single being released. It was a single for Ordinary Love. It had a picture of Nelson Mandela on the front. It's right up my alley. I loved everything about it. Had to go check this out. So I get up early. This was like a Black Friday Record Store Day. So it was like day after Thanksgiving. And I go to my local record store and I've never done this before. And I'm not, at that time, was not used to going into record stores. Was very intimidated.
Yeah.
And I was like, hey, do you have this record? And they were like, no, man, you missed out. And next to this guy is there's somebody standing there with a stack of these records that he had clearly, so they had clearly set them aside for this person who came in to pick them up. And I was, but I looked so sad that he gave me one anyway. But I was like, but it made me think, I was like, oh, okay. So, like, this is how this works. I have to, like, know somebody at the record store and, like, call them ahead and, like, you know, I'm like, is this how this is? Oh, man. Well, at least I got this record. And I, like, felt really grateful that I got this record. So that was my first experience. And then my next experience was that I found a different record store. Or actually, I think the next time I went back to that same record store and they were like, no, we don't do that anymore. It doesn't really help us. So they didn't like it. But it makes me wonder whether they got kicked out or whether they just didn't like it. But then my next experience was at Record Surplus. Up on Santa Monica Boulevard, and they published a list of what they were going to have, and then you show up that day and they pass it out like a menu in line, and you mark the ones that you want, and if they still have it in stock, they make a little stack for you, and they hand you over your records, and it was a very, very efficient process. It was a small record store, so I felt good about supporting this little record store. Like, Amoeba also does it, but Amoeba is so big that I'm just like, it just feels overwhelming to me, but, like, this little record store, I was like, all right, and now I go back to that record store on a regular, because it's like, oh, I like this place, this is great, they're very efficient about it, so... So that's my usual go-to for record store day. I believe it's even where I found a record for you, that Georgia Blue record. It was that record store day.
Oh, yeah. Was it a record store day? Dang.
It was. So every once in a while, there's something good. You should always check it out. And then, like you said, if you don't see anything, it's probably not worth the hassle. But sometimes there's something good.
The Harvest guys called it a necessary evil record store day. Like they'll have the highest volume of sales, but they have to do so much purchasing to prep for it that it's not necessarily like they're not like walking out of it like the Monopoly man, but
sure, yeah.
Part of life is a record store.
So why is it necessary for them?
I mean, if you don't do it, right, like the real record heads are gonna go. They're going to go somewhere else. They're going to find the places with special releases. And evidently, like, they had funny stories about, like, you can't sell online until the next morning.
Yeah.
At, like, 8 a.m. or whatever. And so, mm-hmm. like, they put everything immediately online at, like, 8 a.m. and then watch like, the prices all drop as everybody's dumping their excess, like, inventory.
Yeah. I wonder. It's interesting. I wonder how it'll evolve. Because I feel like when it started, I mean, I don't know when it started. When I started going, I don't think that records were quite as big. When I first became aware of it, I don't think records were quite as big of a thing. They didn't have a whole section at Target that had replaced CDs, mm-hmm. you know? And so, like, there's plenty of vinyl exclusives and color vinyl and all kinds of stuff out there now. But they still did Record Store Day. I don't know. Just... I guess it's a way to sell more stuff for the record companies.
That's who we're all thinking of here. Hopefully the record labels will survive this somehow. I've got a slight mechanical issue going on with my record player, my console stereo right now. And so that has also sapped some of my enthusiasm for buying new vinyl because I'm going to want to play it, but then it's going to remind me that I need to get this like figured out and fixed and stuff. And that's going to be a bummer. So, as a problem avoider, Matt, and I don't know what number that makes me on the Enneagram, I'm going to prefer just to not buy a new vinyl. So it doesn't remind me about a problem hanging over my head.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Yeah. I thought you had like a vinyl player person. In Colorado,
yeah, Dr. Dan the Music Man.
You gotta find your local. I'm sure there's somebody in Asheville. That seems like a place where you've got some folks.
So I gotta,
or just go talk to Harvest Records. I bet they can. Yeah.
I don't think they'll have. I think I'll go not on Record Store Day to ask them this.
Yeah, I actually don't need any records. I just have a question about how to fix my record player.
Matt, on a scale of 1 to 10, how much did you miss Coachella last weekend?
A lot. And here's why, Zach. I was okay with it in the weeks leading up. I was like, it's fine. Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm kind of bumped to not be going. But like you said, like the lineup's not super exciting to me. Like, and I've got some other concerts I'm going to in April. It'll be fine. And then about 2 or 3 times a day, someone different will text me and say, are you going to Coachella? Did you go to Coachella last weekend? Mm-hmm. Are you at Coachella? And I'm like, oh my gosh. On the one hand, it's kind of fun that I have a reputation as somebody that would be there.
You're the Coachella man, yeah.
Even in my 40s, I have this reputation. But definitely was like, no, sad face every time.
I you know, as we rationalized last week on the podcast, how it wasn't a big deal that we weren't going to be there. And I happened to turn on the YouTube during the weekend and I started watching the live feeds. And that made me miss being there for sure. You know, so that was a bummer. I watched some live feed stuff, which was good. I don't know if you saw this. I don't know what this means. Evidently, Damon, during Blur's set, not pleased with the reception Blur received and said, you're never going to see us again.
Yeah, that's
this weekend. Are they pulling the old what you call it? Missing out on weekend two here.
Well, I mean that's really a coincidence because that's what I told my congregation last Sunday. I was like, well, I didn't get a good response today, so.
That's a good one. That's a good thing to
do. Yeah, we would have given them a better response, I'm sure. Because sure I really know all the Blur songs by heart.
I knew all the Blur lyrics. They weren't singing along loud enough.
To that one song.
I showed the Vinyl Child is, I think we're crossing the threshold right now, Matt, into like young child pop interest fandom. Because the new pop star for my almost 8-year-old is Olivia Rodrigo, and she came on during the No Doubt set, so we watched some highlights of that, and she was into that. That was fun.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, that would have been cool to see. I heard that was a good set.
Well, a couple years from now, Matt, we'll be right back.
That's right. Not next year. It's Easter. I did subscribe.
Who knows?
What's up?
Maybe they'll change Easter.
Maybe they'll change Easter. Yeah, it'll have to start moving in response to
to reunite the Eastern and the Western forms of Christianity, and we'll settle on your day. It's not during Coachella.
Somebody asked me this year why Easter changes, and I couldn't remember off the top of my head. And I should have told them it's to avoid interfering with Coachella. That's why. That's why the date of Easter has to move every year.
Is it a test?
I don't know. We may have to look into other music festivals too. I mean, it also like I subscribe to this. I'm getting ready for New Orleans this summer, so I have this New Orleans podcast that I listen to now, and they were doing a prep episode for the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival. It sounds amazing. I was like, I bet it's a madhouse, but it sounds really cool. It made me think of music festivals and how you can just discover artists. Like, yeah, there's the headliners, right? But there's also like going in this little tent and discovering some new thing. And that's something that you don't get. I mean, I loved going to Springsteen twice last week and going to see Mavis Staples tonight. Love going to a concert for an artist that I love. But one thing that you don't get from that is just wandering into a random tent and like discovering somebody new. So
The art installations.
That too.
The pizza might be reasonably priced. There's so much. Well, I guess we'll have to learn and grow, Matt, I suppose.
Well, speaking of someone who was trying to get into a festival and was turned away, let's look at these texts.
Okay.
That's my best transition. It's the best I got.
All right.
Easter, fifth Sunday of Easter 5, fifth Sunday of Easter, April 20th, 2024, Acts 8, 26 to 40. Finally, sorry, we got a couple of weeks of preaching, and then finally, Acts gives us a good song. It's kind of like Blur said, you had a bunch of stuff that you didn't know very well, and then here comes, it's song 2. And here we get it right here, Acts 8, 26 to 40. The angel of the Lord said to Philip, "Get up and go toward the south to the road that goes down from Jerusalem to Gaza. This is a wilderness road." So he got up and went. Now there was an Ethiopian eunuch, a court official of the Candace, queen of the Ethiopians, in charge of her entire treasury. He had come to Jerusalem to worship and was returning home. Seated in his chariot, he was reading the prophet Isaiah. Then the Spirit said to Philip, "Go over to this chariot and join it." So Philip ran up to it and heard him reading the prophet Isaiah. He asked, "Do you understand what you are reading?" And he replied, "Well, how can I unless someone guides me?" And he invited Philip to get in and sit beside him. Now the passage of the scripture he was reading was this: "Like a sheep he was led to the slaughter, and like a lamb silent before its shearer, so he does not open his mouth. In his humiliation, justice was denied him. Who can describe his generation? For his life is taken away from the earth." The eunuch asked Philip, "About whom, may I ask you, does the prophet say this? About himself or about someone else?" And then Philip began to speak, and starting with this scripture, he proclaimed to him the good news about Jesus. As they were going along the road, they came to some water. And the eunuch said, "Look, here is water. What is to prevent me from being baptized?" And he commanded the chariot to stop. And both of them, Philip and the eunuch, went down into the water, and Philip baptized him. When they came up out of the water, the Spirit of the Lord snatched Philip away, and the eunuch saw him no more and went on his way rejoicing. But Philip found himself at Azotus, And as he was passing through the region, he proclaimed the good news to all the towns until he came to Caesarea. Word of God, word of life.
Thanks be to God for a good story, finally.
For a good story. Such a good story. So this story has a history in my congregation. We have council minutes and sermon records from 1948 and 1953, the late 40s and early 50s, when the pastor of the church was trying to decide whether its neighbor, let me start this story right. So the church founded as a mostly white European descent church. And in the 1940s, the church saw the neighborhood changing and the people didn't look like them anymore. It was mostly African-American folks moving into the community from the Deep South, part of the Great Migration. And the church, St. Mark's, was like, what should we do about this? Looks like we have a couple options. We could turn inward and focus on ourselves and see how long we last. We could pack up and move somewhere where the people look more like us, or we could open our doors and try to be a church for all nations. Now, I know it's fraught with a lot of things. It's a complicated road, but which of those three options are they going to choose? And the pastor preaches a sermon based on this text and the Ethiopian eunuch and preaches a text about difference and how God reaches out to people beyond what we think our community should look like or what our community currently looks like. Preaches a sermon about inclusion way back in 1948. And so, so that's the first time that this story shows up historically in the story of St. Mark's. And then fast forward some 70 years, and I preach on this text in 2018 when our church is deciding whether to become a Reconciling in Christ church. And I focus on once again, on inclusion, right? That this is somebody outside of the community or the way that they are thinking about community. And it's a surprise move that there's more folks included than we thought. So shows up multiple times in my congregation's history. And I think still holds up as complicated as the issues are, that there's a story about difference in the midst of this text. So that's my story, Zach. That's my story.
Boom, Matt. There's so much going on in this story. Like, it's crazy that we have 2 weeks of Peter just fussing at the people. And then they're like, well, we're going to give you an incredibly rich story with a million different crazy things going on. Right. It's a story about new things. You know, the great line is, what's to prevent me from being baptized? And this new thing happens. But, you know, all the details have all these layers of unexpectedness, if you will, that the Ethiopian eunuch is a eunuch. That's kind of new in the Bible. There aren't a lot of eunuchs running around. He's from Ethiopia. Which, you know, oldest Christian churches are Ethiopian, I believe. But, you know, not a lot of Ethiopians in the Bible either. Serving a Candace, the queen, who's a very important person who serves a matriarchal leader, which Bible not huge on matriarchs, but here you got one. And if it's not enough, they're on the road to Gaza, which is the Gaza that is in the news these days. Same place. Mm-hmm. And when Philip gets disappeared, teleported, it's to the Advent, what is it called? I just looked it up. The name of that city, our editor would insert here, but it is a small city on the coast just north of Gaza, so not too far away, but in the south. So you got all these unexpected textures in the story as well.
Mm-hmm.
Mixing,
yeah.
New things for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Amen. That's what brought me up short reading this text in 2024. That road that goes down from Jerusalem to Gaza. It's really hard to not wilderness stop road. At that word. Yeah. And so then the next line is, this is a wilderness road. It's really hard to not stop at that word and pause there and be brought up short. Of course, it's in the news. And I live in Los Angeles, across the street from USC, which just stopped its valedictorian from speaking because she's Palestinian. Mm-hmm. And there were threats. So it's in the news. I think, I mean, obviously the challenge, a challenge is that you're probably not going to solve the Israel-Palestine conflict in your sermon on this Sunday.
If you do.
And yet, it's hard to read a text that says Gaza and not say something about it. So I think it's worth, and maybe part of the way in there is to think about this road from Jerusalem to Gaza. And that is the line that I'll be reflecting on as I prepare to preach on this. The road from Jerusalem to Gaza, what's this wilderness road? What's happening with this road?
I'm sure I've told the story before on the podcast, but my story of being on the road to the south towards Gaza-ish, we were on the road to Hebron when I took students in 2017 to do the Israel-Palestine thing. We coincided our visit with the visit of the President of the United States at the time, Donald James J. Trump. So it was super chill. I'm just kidding. It was incredibly intense. And the day that Trump visited the Western Wall, which is the day that he, I believe, like announced that the consulate was moving to Jerusalem, we visited Hebron and got this tour of Hebron, and it's insane and is its own story in its own right, because Hebron is a place where there's a Israeli settlement inside of the city. Most of the time, the settlements are like off in the countryside. And you're not going to believe this, but putting an Israeli settlement inside of a Palestinian city, doesn't make things cool. So we had this really, I mean, the most intense experience I've had in life happened that morning down in Hebron. And you have to have a driver. They don't let you drive. You can go wherever you want with your American passport in Israel and Palestine, but they don't let you drive. You have to hire a driver. And so we had hired a driver, and we were, everybody survived, which was good. Everybody's back in the van, and we're on the way back to Jerusalem, where we're staying at the Lutheran World Federation hostel. And our van driver at one point turned and said, well, you know, Trump's in the old city, so they've got Jerusalem closed right now. So we can go sit in traffic and wait for them to open up the city. Or he was Palestinian. I live right over here. And you guys, if you just want to come hang out, like you can hang out. And so remains the greatest international like travel experience of my life that we went to his house, and it was a multi-generational, you know, his mom was there, his sisters are there with their kids. And we spent the afternoon, on their rooftop. They served us all kinds of snacks and treats and their kids running around. And my mom was on that trip, which was crazy. And I've got this great picture of my mom, like shaking this like cucumber at his mom, because they're trying to talk. My mom, you're not going to believe this, doesn't speak very much Arabic. His mom didn't speak much English, but she is serving us like all these like snacks and vegetables and stuff. And they've got this cucumber. My mom's trying to figure out what this is. Like, is there a name for this particular cucumber? And somebody took a picture of her, and it looks like she's shaking this cucumber. But it was on the road to Gaza, right? On that wilderness road. And this the most unexpected thing happened, right? Vanished. That's the other side of the story that I think is worth spending some time with too. Philip vanishes at the end of this. And I think that's an important part, that sometimes we'll get so excited about the new thing and the like push everybody to change thing. But like, so I'm thinking, I've not come to a position on this, but perhaps it's a part of like, Philip doesn't like, would seem like a good idea that you just converted the guy who holds the treasury for the kingdom of Ethiopia. You got yourself in a good political position now, and you're going to have some power because you're going to have the Candace of Ethiopia backing you, right? Like, and he doesn't get that, right? Like he doesn't get, it disappears. Like,
yeah,
that's a part of it. There's a fleeting, there's some loss in this as well, which I think is worth spending a little time thinking about.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, man. Well, lots of turnover in the Acts text. I bet we're going to spend less time on the gospel text because there's so much going on in Acts. But let's take a look at that gospel. John 15.
John 15. We've abandoned Luke in the year of Luke for John. But if there's any condolence, what am I where I'm looking for? Consolation. That's the word I'm looking for. It is, I think, the thesis statement of the Gospel of John, Matt. Doesn't necessarily make it easy to preach on, but I think it's the heart of what John's gospel is really about. Which they should really, instead of the 3:16 thing, be John 15. Jesus said to his disciples, "I am the true vine, for my Father is the vine grower." Is that not just a venter? Can we change it to venter? He removes every branch in me that bears no fruit, and every branch that bears fruit, he prunes to make it bear more fruit. You have already been cleansed by the word that I have spoken to you. Abide in me as I abide in you. Just as the branch cannot bear fruit by itself unless it abides in the vine, neither can you unless you abide in me. I am the vine, you are the branches. Those who abide in me and I in them bear much fruit, because apart from me, you can do nothing. Whoever does not abide in me is thrown away like a branch and withers. Such branches are gathered, thrown into the fire, and burned. If you abide in me, my words in you, ask for whatever you wish, and it will be done for you. My Father is glorified by this, that you will bear much fruit and become my disciples. The good news of Jesus.
Praise to you, O Christ.
I mean, it's not a good story. It's very the kind of John talk that I don't love. You know, abide in me as I knew and this and that. And it sounds like a riddle and like, but it is the abiding thing is the heart of, I think what John's, that's what belief and faith looks like in John. It's being connected, and worth spending some time that the connection is not like a, the metaphor here is not like some sort of like spiritual, soulful connection. It's vine, the vine that comes up out of the dirt, like a real tangible natural connection that is worth, especially with the Gospel of John, leaning into a bit here. The other note worth saying, you hear this like kind of harsh line that the branches that bear no fruit are going to be cut off. And you're like, well, I don't want to be that one. Like, but the ones who do bear fruit, they're going to be pruned. Everybody's getting some kind of haircut here. so that's like, that's a part of it, right? Like there's this, and actually these two texts set up a good tension together, right? Like the, that if we hear the Acts text saying like new things, God's doing new things outside of what you know or what you expect. But we also hear this like admonition to abide in Jesus, abide in this thing that you can't, whose boundaries aren't always super clear to us is a challenge.
Yeah. Yeah. The connection, yeah, that's good to see the tensions between John and Acts. It makes me think of the vine as connection, but also that road is a way of connecting people. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you spend any time thinking about roads, but it is also a form of...
Not many people do, man.
Connecting people.
Did you know in Southern California, there's a road that connects to disparate portions of the state of California, which again, if it were his own country, would be the eighth largest economy in the world.
Yeah,
called the grapevine, Matt.
Oh yeah, yeah. Oh, that's good. Yeah, that's good.
For our listeners who are unfamiliar with the highway system of Southern California, is it the I-5?
Yeah, it's the five through the mountains.
Five.
The five. You used to drive that
Central Valley. I did. It's been a long time. The time. It's been a while.
It's been a while.
The cruelest thing that happened to you in the life is you drive up where the grapevine would be snowing at the top and you'd be like, what universe is that? Because I'm going back down to 120 degrees.
Yeah.
In Bakersfield. It essentially connects Bakersfield in Los Angeles. That's what everybody knows it as. There may be other parts of the state, but most people use it.
Yeah, I think of it as connecting Los Angeles and Sequoia National Park. <You know? laughs> I thought Bakersfield was just the place that you stop for ice cream and a really good breakfast on your way.
Or ice milk, you know, yeah.
That's, yeah. Anyway, this text makes me think of my lemon tree, our lovely lemon tree in our backyard, which often needs to be pruned. I have never pruned it, but my beloved spouse loves to prune things. So she sometimes prunes the lemon tree. The other thing to know about, you know, it's different from a vine, the fruit from our lemon tree is not always in season. It just explodes with fruit in the wintertime And it's so much fruit that we don't know what to do with it. So Chris will bring a giant bag of lemons to church every Sunday. And people are so excited because lemons are expensive and our lemons are really good. In fact, one of our members said they're kissed by God because they're from the pastor's backyard. It's great, Shirley. That's great. But Chris brings them like every week. Well, now we're getting into the season where there are a few less lemons on the tree. Eventually they will go away for a few months. And so there was a week when she didn't bring any lemons and people were like, where are the lemons? You didn't bring any lemons. We were looking forward to those lemons, but the lemons are not always.
You are not abiding in the Lord.
That's right. You're not abiding in the Lord, but those lemons are not always in season. So, I think, of course this text focuses on the pruning, but it does make me think about how fruit is sometimes in season and out of season. And, I don't know. Maybe there's some seasons where we're not bearing fruit, but it doesn't mean that we're done. It doesn't mean that we can't bear fruit again in a season that's coming. So I don't know. Think about my lemon tree.
If you've been starving for preaching on agrarian metaphor, through your bone.
What are we listening to?
Well, Matt, I continue to celebrate the season of Eurovision. And we're getting closer, May 11th, to the grand finale. And Matt, I've got a good one for you this week, okay? Because there might be a way to look at that Acts text to say, the rules you thought you had, they're no longer applicable. In fact, you might say there's no rules, which is the title of an incredible, Matt. I really do. I pray, Matt, that you and all of our listeners we'll go watch the music video for No Rules! ! From Finland. I'm so excited. I can't speak straight. From Finland by an artist called, you ready for this, Matt? Windows 95 Man. the video, the performance at the Finnish Nationals had a denim egg. Lots of crazy things. He starts with no pants. He ends with pants. There's no rules. It's incredible performance art, and the song is actually pretty catchy, and it's going to get you. So maybe just show it on the Jumbotron at church while you're reading it, and you'll get reactions for sure. Then I went looking for some fruit songs, and I found, I'm still getting excited, April 28th, 10 days from our record date here. Tuesday, does that make sense? 30th, the 30th. 28th is a Sunday, 30th. Waxahachie's coming to town. Waxahachie on their deluxe version, which I assume was released on Record Store Day a number of years ago of their previous album, has a track called Fruits of My Labor, which is a Lucinda Williams cover that's lovely and you should check out. And finally, Matt, Wise Blood, who we saw at Coachella last year, has a track called Grapevine, which is partially a reference to the I-5 Grapevine up through the... what are those mountains called? I don't even know. San something else.
Yeah. I think it's the Los Padres National Forest. But I can't remember. Gosh, I'm blanking on it. We'll figure it out. That's good. Yeah, that's good. I remember Wise Blood last year. Well, I'm going to throw in there a couple of songs. In fact, I beat you to it. I'm going to put on a Covenhoven song, Zach. I'm going to do it.
Ooh.
Released just this week, I think, or maybe last week.
Oh, wow. Last Friday.
The Garden and the Grave. What a title.
Oof.
The Garden and the Grave. And when I played it on Spotify, it said concert coming up. Where is he playing? It says house concert, Redlands.
What?
So no, don't know which house. It's, it didn't have an address.
There's often an option for potential house concert hosters is you can have it private, or they can like other people can show up at your house if you want.
Yeah, I don't know how to do it, but Redlands,
do it, Matt, show up at a random house.
Just pretend that I know somebody. That'll be great. What else? Hozier's got a new single called Too Sweet. Too Sweet. So you think about that fruit. Play Hozier's Too Sweet. And then finally, if I'm thinking about Abide, I can't think of any good Abide songs, but it does make me think of Staying, which makes me think of the best Stay song, which is clearly Lisa Loeb's stay.
Did you listen to the, is it 60 songs?
I'm sure I did, but it's been a while.
About how, like, how Lisa Loeb broke was she lived in the apartment complex with Ethan Hawke, who was in that movie, like Slackers, right? Because it was in Slackers. And, like, he was Ben Stiller was directing, like, was in the film too, and like, incredibly random. Like, he was like,
wow.
Evidently, at some point, Ethan Hawke was like, oh, my neighbor plays like a lot of open mics and it's got some good songs. And so he passes the tape to Ben Stiller. And that's how Lisa Loeb and Stigbert happens.
That's wild. That's wild.
I do love, I mean, full disclosure, obviously, it's not much of a disclosure. It's just affirming knowledge most of our listeners already have. I love Lisa Loeb. I also love that she hosts a daily show on Sirius XM 90s on 9. Love that.
Oh, yeah, 90s on 9. I forgot she hosts that.
Downtown Julie Brown and Lisa Loeb. That's all. All you need.
Nice. Well, good playlist. It's been real.
Real vinyl.